Hello, I'm James.
And I'm Paul.
And we're both technology and data specialists at Field Fisher Silicon Valley. Today, we're looking at the UK's recent guidance on loot boxes. What does it have to say, and what does it mean for your business? So, earlier this year, the UK's Government Department for Culture, Media and Sport announced the latest set of guidance on the use of loot boxes in video games. Choosing to forego the gambling regulation approach, the UK's opted for an industry self-regulatory approach. But what does that mean in practice? And what do companies operating internationally need to do to comply? So, Paul, thanks for joining us. Before we dive in, would you maybe just be able to go over the obvious for those of us who aren't familiar with video games? What is a loot box, and why are they worth talking about?
Certainly. Thanks, James. So, loot boxes, for anyone not overly familiar with the gaming industry, are mystery boxes that contain a random selection of items in association with the particular game you're playing. They can be purchased with your money or credits built up within a game. Depending on the generation you're from, you might want to think of them as the digital version of those old gacha games, where you pet your coin in the machine, turn the handle, and get one of those little balls with a random toy in it. Or maybe a digital version of something like baseball cards, Pokemon cards, or Magic the Gathering. If you are under 25 though, chances are you have no need for explanation, as some of the stats suggest you'll be more than familiar with examples from games such as FIFA, Overwatch, and many of the major AAA titles out there. And the reason we are talking about this, of course, is because of just the enormous economic impact they have on the monetization model for the games industry. In 2022, loot boxes accounted for $18.9 billion of the global market, and it is expected that by 2032, the annual revenue will be $32.7 billion. So this is approximately one-tenth of the video games industry's international revenue, and on some metrics approaching the size of the entire international music industry. It's simply an enormous figure. However, with their randomized nature and increasing concerns about potential connections to gambling, government scrutiny has been growing over recent years. We've therefore seen a number of initiatives worldwide to try and regulate their use, and particularly that used by children. In that context, the new UK guidance is the latest attempt to bring some clarity to what some have considered a bit of a legal grey area.
Right, I see. So what exactly does the new guidance have to say then? What does it tell us companies that we have to do?
So the guidance provides 11 industry principles we focus on improving transparency standards surrounding loot boxes in video games. In particular, these include, among others, principle number 4. This requires that platforms, publishers, and developers disclose the presence of paid loot boxes prior to the purchase and download of a game, so that the gamer can make an informed decision. Principle number 5 requires that businesses give clear probability disclosures, for example, telling users the likelihood of them obtaining a particular feature in a loot box. And principle number 6 requires that paid loot boxes be designed and presented in a manner that is easily understandable to players and which promotes fair and responsible play. Supporting those principles 2 and 10 that focus on providing parents and players with information about how to play responsibly, manage their spending effectively, and driving awareness about what tools and technological controls are available to manage their engagement with loot boxes.
I see. I mean, none of that sounds too particularly controversial. I feel like some of that we've heard before. Is this the sort of thing that we have seen in existing legislation?
Well, yes and no. So there are similar approaches that have already been adopted around the world, such as in China, which has required such disclosure since 2017, Taiwan following suit the following year, and a similar law will be coming into effect in South Korea from early 2024. All heavy video games jurisdiction, both in terms of design and users gaming too. The UK guidance, though, has additional detail which makes the practical impact of those provisions potentially more significant. So take, for example, the placement requirements for the disclosures. Elsewhere, it has been possible to just tuck this information away, buried amongst other information such that it is unlikely to be found and sent to the regular player. The UK guidance changes that by requiring that the chances of acquiring an item or category of item is displayed in an easily accessible, meaningful, and understandable manner appropriate to the players and audience for which it is intended. So this means that the bar has been somewhat raised in terms of what is being expected. But then again, there is still clearly a degree of flexibility being given to businesses in terms of how they can approach this. For now, we expect that the best approach for developers will be to probably continue to rely on the guidelines set out by individual platforms, for example, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and so forth, while we wait for a more standardized approach, or at least we wait to see if a more standardized approach will develop.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, Paul, whilst we're waiting for these standards approaches to be developed, what do you think that businesses who are evaluating their compliance plans today, what does this new guidance mean to them?
Well, for those who are already complying with the App Store terms, we expect there will not be much substantive change to be made. For those who are taking a risk-based approach, though, we expect the scrutiny may increase from the platforms themselves. Although there are no new enforcement measures to speak of in the guidance, we are definitely seeing a tightening up of standards across the industry.
Oh, really? So, I mean, when you say tightening, what exactly do you imagine there? What do you think that tightening is going to look like?
Well, I think across the data protection spectrum, we are witnessing a lot more accountability from stakeholders. Not only are they responsible to regulators and government, but also the civil society and savvy individuals are also holding them to account. For example, we started to see complaints to the UK advertising regulator, the Advertising Standards Authority, for example, that Hutch failed to disclose loot box presence for F1 Clash on the Apple App Store and Rebel Racing on the Google Play Store. The rulings found that Hutch was in breach of advertising regulations. So this is therefore an alert to those who need to do more to make their use of loot boxes more transparent.
Right. Okay. So in addition to this sort of specific loot box guidance, then you've got to be looking more broadly at also these other potentially adjacent areas like data protection and advertising regulation. Okay. So now that we've looked more closely at the principles of transparency, let's then turn to some of those other principles that didn't make your list. So some of the more onerous ones like age assurance, principles 1 and 3, refund policies, principle 9, and of course, the unauthorized external sales principle, principle 8. Paul, can you give us a rundown of what the guidance has to say about those three new areas?
Well, sure. Let's start with age assurance, which is already provided for in the UK's Age Appropriate Design Code and the recently enacted Online Safety Act. There is a lot of focus on age assurance and the technology and third parties that can support this drive that platforms and games are only accessed by those whom the products are developed for. The ISO is, in fact, developing a standard on this exact topic. Any time a young person runs up a large bill on in-app purchases, it makes headline news. The industry guidelines want this to be resolved more quickly where it does happen, although ideally, setting would be in place with spend maximums controlled by parents where relevant would prevent such incidents. So there is a lot of focus on age assurance and the technology and third parties that can support this drive that platforms and games are only accessed by those whom the products are developed for. In the US, for example, in recent FTC decisions against Epic Games and Microsoft, businesses were pushed to remove barriers for players reversing their purchase decisions and claiming refunds for in-game goods. Principle 8, with respect to unauthorized external sale of items acquired from paid loot boxes for real money, sits somewhat apart from the others in that it identifies an issue, but is much less clear on how to resolve it. The technical working group stresses that continued investment in IP protection is the preferred solution to the issue of unauthorized digital reselling of in-game goods. But unlike most of the other principles, we are provided with scant detail on what this would look like in practice. So given the changes, like the new approach to edge gating or throughput bots, to be something quite game-changing, and so businesses will want to be looking to this proactively rather than being caught flat-footed and left behind.
I feel like we've heard that one before. When is the axe eventually going to fall? I guess we're all just going to have to wait and find out. Well, hey, thanks, Paul. I appreciate that. I think that's probably just about all we've got time for. But before we do wrap up, Paul, would you be able to give our listeners just a rundown on some of those key points and the key takeaways that they need to think about going forward?
Yes, of course. Well, I think number one, the first point is that whilst these principles are guidance, unlike the more aggressive regulatory approaches to loot boxes in Europe, such as the Netherlands' ban on loot boxes, regulation does remain an option in the UK if the desired outcome is not reached. So businesses using loot boxes must consider how transparent the relevant notices, including the degree of probability, are, besides determining effectiveness of the age assurance methods, in order to ensure that their games are only accessed by those whom they are designed for. Number two, maintaining brand reputation is something businesses will want to keep at the forefront of their mind when considering this new guidance. If nothing else, we can expect that increased public scrutiny will undoubtedly follow this news, as we have seen in practice. Companies who will find themselves at the back of the pack risk becoming mired in protracted proceedings in the court of public opinion, and ultimately pushing players to more compliant competitors. Number three, without a clear enforcement mechanism for the principles, there is a degree of uncertainty as to the scale and speed of change we can expect to current market practice. However, some of the changes, like the new approach to edge gating or throughput bots, to be something quite game-changing. And so businesses will want to be looking to this proactively rather than being caught flat-footed and left behind.
That all makes sense. Thank you, Paul. Most informative. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on our latest episode of Field Fisher's Bite-Sized Legal Podcast, your source for concise legal updates on the key legal developments in technology and data protection law. If you have any questions about today's update, don't hesitate to reach out to us. And of course, if you found it useful, do make sure to give us a like and review on your podcast channel of choice. Thanks again for taking the time to listen, and we'll see you next time.